Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood. With me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, people are collectively losing their minds all around the world for many various different reasons. But mainly in the movie world, they are losing their minds over the prospect of Robert Zemeckis directing a Flash movie. We have covered this on our previous podcast, but developments have feathered and more people have passed.
Yeah, we've had, this was an interesting barrage all at once, because it first started with the confirmation that Zemeckis was now officially in talks. But with him came Sam Raimi and Matthew Vaughn.
And Mark Webb.
And Mark, I didn't hear Mark Webb initially. I heard those four names. And then it said Sam Raimi passed on it. And that's when I heard that Mark Webb passed on it, which I thought was interesting because I didn't hear him the first go around. And honestly, I didn't think he'd do it because all the crap he got for the Amazing Spider-Man movies. So it looks like it's down to Zemeckis and Vaughn right now. And out of those two, since I kind of want Matthew Vaughn to do Man of Steel 2.
Or Kingsman 3.
He can do Kingsman 3. I can have both of these things. I can't have Flash and Man of Steel, but I can't have Kingsman and Man of Steel. So we can have both of these things. We can share as long as Man of Steel 2 is next and Kingsman 3 comes later. So I guess I'm picking Zemeckis, and I have no problems with that, actually.
Well, the thing for me when I read the news was that it suggests to me very much the kind of movie that they're going for. The fact they went after two former Spider-Man directors tells me the kind of tone they're going for. That combined with Amber Heard's Mera picture, which got released this week with that very, very, very colorful bright green suit and that very burning red hair, kind of signaled to me like a clear delineation, like, let us get through Justice League and then we will fire and all things, you know, Zack Snyder will go away and we will rebirth our universe as long as we can, you know, get Affleck to continue.
Yeah, and to go along with the mirror picture, there's a bust or a statue kind of thing of a mock-up of Momoa as Aquaman, and if it's accurate to what he's going to look like in James Wan Aquaman, I mean, it's straight up like orange suit with the scaly things and the green pants, straight up Aquaman, and it fits with Mera's suit. So yeah, as I've kind of been preaching here lately, for Warner Brothers, is hope Wonder Woman's a hit.
Which we have hope for now.
We do have hope for. Just get past Justice League and then move forward. And all of these mostly director, I can't say announcements because...
Candidates
that they're going after, it kind of seems like they have a direction they want to go. And it looks like this could be the direction for them. They just have to get past Justice League.
Well, I mean, but the downside to all of that is Justice League could leave you in a place where none of these characters are people that people want to get further on with. I mean, like, we know that Gordon's going to be part of Justice League, so you're continuing to flush out the Batman world, and we know how badly they want to do the Batman. And Vaughn is just, I mean, Reeves is just now finished ramping up, you know, publicity for War of the Planet of the Apes. He has to get through that. Then he has to move to pre-production on Batman while also coming back to do more press when the DVD for Planet of the Apes comes out. You know, we've heard rumors of a Suicide Squad 2, but those kind of conflict with Ayer's Birds of Prey movie, which I saw that Ayer was attached to something else today.
Scarface.
Which makes a whole lot of sense for who he is and the kind of director that he is.
Which would, I would think, puts in question him doing
Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah. So I hear what you're saying about the characters, and after Batman vs. Superman, I can, that's a valid concern. However, coming out of that movie, as much as people hated that movie,
they loved Wonder Woman.
They loved Wonder Woman, and they loved to like Ben Affleck's Batman. Even the Suicide Squad. Most people say, I like these characters. The movie was crap, but I like these characters. So if they can keep with that theme of just having the characters survive through Justice League, and people, it seems people will like them, and they can take them into a better place.
It seems kind of like right now, the Justice League movie is kind of like the NBA season. We're all just kind of dragging along to the point where we can get this thing over with and have the thing that we want. You know, we can move on to the thing we actually want.
Yeah, the thing that we already know is coming.
Right.
And the way the more this goes, the more it looks like that.
Which is going to make for an awkward press tour. Hi, my name is Zack Snyder. I'm Dead Man Walking. I don't have a job after this. Please hire me.
It's beyond Dead Man Walking at this point. It's like, I mean, particularly if Wonder Woman is what it seems to be.
Opening targeting range is very wide. We're talking about anywhere from 65 million to 100 million.
Yeah, but I think 65 is way, way too low.
But all of those that whole range would still be the lowest box office open for a DCEU movie, yeah, period.
The lowest one so far is Man of Steel, which is like 125.
Right.
And I know people will be disappointed if Wonder Woman gets less than that, but there's a possibility it gets less on the opening and more domestic.
Has longer legs.
Yeah. Which is what's going to matter in the end. But, yeah, if Wonder Woman turns out to be, at that, if it's good, it will be the jewel of DCEU at that point. I don't know what they're, going to do. Comic-Con, and then that press tour is going to be something.
Well, he won't answer questions at Con. He'll do the panel. There'll be a press line after the panel. He probably won't even do that. He'll probably send his wife out there, Deborah, to do that. Yeah. And then when he's doing the press tour for Justice League, it'll be, you know, I've had a great time. It's been really fun. I need to move on to new creative endeavors. You know, we moved it from Justice League Parts 1 and 2 to just Justice League for a reason. You know, we are going to do Steppenwolf, but it will be with a new creative team behind the camera. So that press tour is just going to be really interesting to see. Because the set visit was awkward. They flew everybody in like 2 weeks after, you know, to do a major PR reboot. And, you know, have Deborah sitting there on set and Zach sitting there on set having drinks with press reporters saying, you know, I learned my lesson. You know, people don't like deconstruction of superheroes, yada, yada. Then we get a Justice League trailer that has a desaturated color palette and a tone that is very much, you know, got Zack Snyder. So,
there are certain things you're not going to escape from Zack Snyder. And that color palette and just his aesthetics, that's just what you're going
to
get.
Not to mention the timetable you're working with.
Yeah,
they couldn't fix things. No. Like they delayed some after Dawn of Justice. They did take some of the reaction into account. That's why they did that press tour and set visit. They changed some things. I have no doubt they changed some things. But those pre-visualized set pieces were set in stone. Ask Peyton Reed. Like, there's only, when you're that deep into pre-production on a movie, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, all of the big action set pieces, like, you can tweak those here and there, but more, by and large, those are there. That's what you're stuck with. And this is their own fault for tying themselves to Justice League without even seeing what happens for Batman vs. Superman. They could have retooled what leads into those set pieces, but the set pieces are there, and because of Zack Snyder, they're going to look very much like Zack Snyder. So, I mean, I think the best you can hope for Justice League is that it's like Man of Steel, which is divisive as hell, but some people like it and will defend it, and some people just hate it.
But what happens if we are in a place where Thor Ragnarok makes more money than Justice League?
Oh.
Because they're both November releases.
Well, at this point, if I'm Warner Brothers, I go in not expecting it to beat Thor. Should it? Yes. It should pound Thor into the ground. But at this point, you may have leveled it off if Wonder Woman's good. But I wouldn't go in there expecting it to beat, like, to make $1 billion. No, that's not what's going to happen. It just needs to hold steady, not lose money, and I think that can be accomplished and then sail on away from him.
Well, 875, isn't that what Donald Justice ended up with, somewhere around 875 million worldwide?
Something like that, yeah.
Which, I mean, it's still short of a billion, but...
I mean, most movies would want that, so...
But again, we're talking about a movie that had Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, the holy trinity of DC Comics, on screen for the first time. You had Lex Luthor, as portrayed by Jesse Eisenberg. Yeah. You had Doomsday. You did Death of Superman, finally. You did all of that, and you still couldn't cross $1 billion.
After you got past Wonder Woman on that list, that's when most of the eye rolls come in. Actually, most people say Batman and Wonder Woman, because those are the things that people like, and they pretty much...
Even though... But I can't even say that people liked Affleck's version of Batman, because it itself was divisive. The character duration of him is basically a murder bat.
Yeah.
Like, if you brand somebody, you may not kill them yourselves, but they're going to end up dead in prison. And then the whole, you know, propane tank thing, or flamethrower thing.
I think a lot of people are like, Well, for myself, I know... I like everything else except for the murder part. And I can look at that movie, and I've listened to Snyder talk about it. The murder part is like, it's strictly, that's from Snyder. That is directly from Snyder. He talked about it. He's like, he wanted his Batman to do stuff where it could be argued that it was like manslaughter or something. I'm like, no, that's not what you do. But that's not the script, because most of the deaths that happen, a lot of them happen in that car chase scene, which are that is like, the director can be like, okay, he flips the car, but you see the dudes get out. He has rubber bullets, and he doesn't just like completely like mow this car down where it's like Pac-Man is just eating away at this car, and then it just blows up. And he runs right through it. Those are all director choices. In the script, it's like there's a car chase, Batman does some cool stuff, and he runs into Superman. That's that. And then Snyder's like, no, he's going to kill him and him and him, all of them, and he's going to plow through this truck, and we're going to see this dude get taken out and right in the camera as the car runs clean over him in midair. Those are all direct choices. The warehouse scene where he, in the theatrical cut, he hits people really hard. In that uncut one, he hits people really hard and their brains smatter across the wall. Those are all director things. And I think a lot of people are like, okay, this Batman without the killing is the Batman I've always wanted to see. Some people are like, it's just the murder bat. I don't like it. But
his Bruce Wayne's really good. He is the best Bruce Wayne I think we've had on screen. Because even Keaton's Bruce Wayne was kind of just eclectic and weird. And Bale's was, you barely saw any of the Bruce Wayne part of Christian Bale. Because, yes, you have the whole first movie, but the whole first movie is him figuring out how to become Batman.
Yeah.
And deal with his rage. I mean, it's not, you know, party, you know, I'm going to go hang out with two hot chicks and buy a hotel so I can swim in the pool.
Yeah, like, you see, there, I think Bale is the one that's got it closest to Affleck, but I think Affleck is the best Bruce Wayne. And really, if you can get the Bruce part down and you just kind of look like Batman, you've won. But everybody else before has been like, I got this part down, but not this part. And he's the closest to having it all together.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that we are in this very weird place. And like, with Zemeckis and the Flash movie, like, dude did Back to the Future. He gets a pass for life. But he hasn't done a really box office driven, like really financially successful movie since Polar Express, which was 2003.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's right.
I mean, The Walk was not financially successful at all. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close was not awesome. Allied, which was the last film he did with Brad Pitt, just was dead on arrival. He hasn't. Like, he can get stuff made because he's Robert Zemeckis, and he has a love and affinity for IMAX and pushing the boundaries and all that. But he hasn't had a commercially successful film since Polar Express, which is over a decade ago now.
How'd Beowulf do? Even though that's still way away, too.
That's 2008. I think that was right on the heels of Avatar, right before it or after it. It didn't do too well either.
It's okay. It's weird. But Beowulf's weird. But
well, yeah. I mean, it's an old English folktale. I mean, we're not even in Middle English there. We're in literally English.
Yeah, it's a tough read.
Right. Not only is it a tough read, ask any freshman in college, but it's also, like, very hard to translate to the screen, much less in his particular version of computer-generated animation where all the characters still look really creepy.
Yeah, they do.
He made a children's movie that gave children's nightmares.
I wouldn't say Beowulf's children's story. It's
no, but I'm talking about like Polar Express.
Oh, well. My kid is always the gauge for these things, but that's not very good because she's just used to this kind of stuff. She watches Polar Express all the time. I never even thought about it giving nightmares, and I didn't see it until way later. So, but your point is taken. It's like,
I mean, he can do an adequate job. He can do the funny, he can do the humor, he can do the time elements. He has a very fundamental thing. We ran into the issue also this week of the Billy Cup
Crudup.
Crudup, you know, is he in the movie or is he not thing? I mean, and there's still the argument to be made that the TV Flash is really popular and you've got to battle that as well. But it's the Flash movie itself is really a tricky thing because we're gone through three directors. This will be the third director now. Mm-hmm. Multiple script rewrites. And you've pretty much now lost Ezra Miller for the year because he has to go to Australia to film
Fantastic Beasts 2.
So even if you got a director on board tomorrow, there's no shot of you getting this movie out before 2019.
I forgot about Ezra and Fantastic Beasts. I didn't know they were shooting it this year, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, they're shooting it because it's a November 2019 release. Well, a 2018 release.
Well, now they have a built-in excuse to go in, get their director, say, okay, these are the things that, you know, we need, and go nuts. And then he has at least a year to work on it before they have to start shooting anything.
Which works out with Zemeckis' timeline because he has another movie already lined up.
Universal, yeah. Which they had casting news for today, too. And I can't remember what it is. Janelle Monáe is one of them. I can't remember who the other one is.
I mean, it's... They're in a very peculiar place because, like I said, it just feels like we're trying to get through... Okay, Wonder Woman's a success. It's a 3-star match, maybe a 4-star match. And then we get to... And then we get to Justice League, and it's just, you know, like, okay, here it is. We're going to dispatch Steppenwolf. We're going to have Superman be... fight the Justice League for a few minutes, and then we're going to be able to move on to what we really want
to
do.
Well, to go back to our wrestling metaphors, what we're expecting Justice League, most people are expecting Justice League to be, is Brock and Goldberg the first time. And we saw that match, and it was god-awful. It's like two big behemoths just flailing on each other. And
literally, you know, lining up at either end of the ring and bumping into each other to try and... You know, see who could push the other off the line.
Yeah. Well, Justice League needs to be is Brock and Goldberg, the second go-around, where people are like, we remember this god-awful stuff, and y'all just got to go like 5 minutes and get this over with. And they go 7 minutes, and it's actually pretty good, and all they do is big bumps.
But again, Chad, that was the third time. There was the second time where Goldberg... eliminated Brock in a minute and a half with two spears and a jackhammer.
For the sakes of this metaphor, we're only going with the two because it works better with the two, because I forgot about the three and there's a reason why. Nobody cares about the second.
Well, I mean, like, yes, take your big bumps, show people you can still that these characters can still be relevant and that they can still be likable. And pray to God we don't get a black suit Superman and government.
He can be black suit Superman, but he can only be black suit Superman for like 5 minutes.
With the mullet or without?
Because I've seen pictures, I know he won't have through the whole thing, so it's fine if he has when he shows up, but that's it. It cannot stay here for long, It's got to go. And if you, again, if you need a black suit Superman fix, watch Man of Steel. The skull scene, there it is. It's there. I know you don't see it, realize it's there because Zach's color palette is really dark and it looks like the same dang suit, but it's black. Watch extra features. And there, you're done. So.
Talking about the same studio who was trying to make Death of Superman a thing for, like, you know, 20 years.
Well, Warner Brothers just has this thing with Superman that they just can't seem to get him right. And for me, that's the biggest thing Justice League needs to do for me. Batman and Wonder Woman, I'm not worried about them. They'll be established or established enough by the time we get there.
Well, Batman's already, this will be Batman's third appearance in the DCEU, and Wonder Woman will have had her own solo movie.
Flash.
Looks like he's fresh out of recruitment here in this situation.
And the way they're playing him, I think that'll work. Aquaman, what people have seen of him, they like him. As long as it's that kind of stuff, he's fine. Cyborg, he's probably going to be the odd man out. You just have to keep him, like, relevant enough that people think he's interesting.
And have the CGI do look halfway decent.
Yeah. They picked a bad design to make it look more realistic. But, you know, whatever. But it's Superman. Superman's the guy that's been around the longest. They just can't seem to get right. So, you're not beholden to Clark Kent in this one. Just get Superman right. And let the next guy worry about bringing back Clark from the dead, which is something that's got to happen. Because because the end of Batman vs. Superman was stupid. But I'm not going to keep dwelling on that, even though I could.
Alright. So, I mean, like I said, it'll be interesting. Wonder Woman's 2 weeks away, and that'll put us on the path toward Justice League, and that'll get us, you know, a long wait. Because, you know, after Justice League, we don't get another DCEU movie until December 2018. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. But, again, if they take this time...
Like, just think about the fact that Marvel will be, like, 3 months away. They will be, like, 2 months. They will be 2 months from Captain Marvel. And they will be 3 months from the end of their entire slate of movies with Infinity War Part 2. Yeah. And we will have had one Justice League movie that was haphazardly put together, and we will have just come off an Aquaman movie, the character that everybody loves to make fun of.
But if Justice League doesn't muck it up too much and Aquaman is good, everybody will forgive it and they can go and get it right. They just have to get it right.
All right. So Chad. There's this guy, his name is Simon Kinberg, and he is in talks to direct a movie called X-Men Dark Phoenix, which is supposed to come out in 2019, or is it 18? It's 18, right?
Mm-hmm.
2018, and there was a pact that was made between the stars of First Class that if one of them came back, all of them would come back. We've heard rumblings and rumors about James McAvoy coming back as Professor X for New Mutants. And now we're hearing rumblings about, you know, Fassbender on the Alien Covenant trail saying, you know, I might be open to coming back. You never really know.
I could have sworn when this first went down, we sat here like, of the three of these people, one of them ain't coming back for sure. The other two probably
could be talked into it.
Yeah. And this is what's happening. Jennifer Lawrence ain't coming back. No chance.
Doesn't need it.
So, just by her, this little pack is supposed to blow up and die. But people are generally happy with James McAvoy's Professor X. And this New Mutant movie, in most people's mind, needs a connector. Professor X makes the most sense. So bring McAvoy in. Now, this Fassbender stuff. I like Fassbender. I like him as Magneto. I don't want to see him in this movie because then it becomes every other X-Men movie that we've had so far.
But it's the Dark Phoenix saga, so of course it's going to be every other movie, the X-Men movie we've ever seen so far. And it's written and directed by Simon Kinberg, potentially.
I'm going to ignore the Kinberg stuff right now because, you know, I've been on record saying I think only one of his X-Men movies that he's worked on has been good.
And that's just a complete Vaughn.
Oh, yeah.
That is Vaughn's handprints all over.
Yeah. So I've been on record not saying, thinking that it's a good idea for him to write, direct anything with this franchise, but we're here, so whatever. The movie can feel different, even if this will be the second time we tried Dark Phoenix, and like the fourth movie overall that she's been Phoenix at some point. But if you don't have the constant thing of Charles and Magneto going back and forth at each other, maybe that will make it feel a lot different just by missing him. So while I like him, he can come back later. Right now, no.
You mean you don't like the idea of Magneto and Charles warring to try and see who can win Jane's soul over and control the Phoenix?
We've seen that. It ends with Charles Xavier blowing up. I don't even see it again. You want to do Dark Phoenix? Make her the real Dark Phoenix and do some Dark Phoenix stuff.
Can't really do that. No Logan.
You don't... For the comic version of Dark Phoenix, you don't really need him. You need Cyclops. This is more of a Jean Cyclops thing than a Wolverine butting his head in kind of thing. But the big thing, if you make her Phoenix, Phoenix eats planets. These X-Men ain't sniffed the ozone layer yet, so you kind of got a little problem there. But, you know,
if y'all... I always imagined that they would go the X-3 route and make her a physical manifestation. That it would be kind of an Incredible Hulk thing, where, you know, there's war within a battle between Jean and the Phoenix, and ultimately having to kill one to kill them both. And having that the drama of having to make that choice. I thought the story ideas that exist in X3 are good. Their execution, horrible. But I think the compelling narrative of having to make this choice, we see it all the time with Hulk. I mean, it's a compelling narrative. The problem is no one has found a way to execute it properly.
Well, with Hulk, he's the monster, but he doesn't... really, even though he is a monster, he doesn't really want to hurt anybody unless he's provoked. With Phoenix, like, she gets the power, she uses the power, she's corrupted by the power, but at the end, her goodness wins out and she sacrifices herself for the greater good.
Which is the opposite of which they sacrificed her twice in the original trilogy.
Yeah, like...
They sacrifice her to get them out of Alkaline Lake, mm-hmm. and then they sacrifice her again with Logan putting his claws through her at the end.
I don't know if I say that one was a sacrifice.
Because he was sacrificing the woman he loved?
Yeah, so he's sacrificing. In this one, it's her choice. Like, yeah, in X3, like, ultimately she's like, kill me, blah, blah, blah. No. This one is like, I can do this and save everybody, but I'm going to die. Or I can just keep on eating planets and I'm going to do this and save everybody. So it's like a heroic self-sacrifice that she does, which would be different. She did that in X2, but it would be on a grander scale with the actual Phoenix this time. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Instead of a shadow passing over a bunch of trees?
Yeah. Oh, man. What? These movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, it went through three directors. X3 went through three different directors and three different ideas. And they all had... I mean, there was no way out of that. I mean, Singer had set that up specifically for that purpose.
Yeah. And I forget what they did, and then he left. They did something that made him take Superman Returns, but I don't remember what it was. And both franchises suffered for it.
Superman Returns, man. So Chad, I mean, I think that Fassbender coming back does not make me any more or less excited for an X-Men movie.
It dampers my excitement if it's If it's with Dark Phoenix, it dampens my excitement.
I'm more concerned that they're rushing this through for no purpose.
Oh, that's like baseline concern. Like, you don't have anything ready for this, and you're just trying to get it out. Take your time.
You have Deadpool. Make your Deadpool money.
Deadpool's planned to set up. It seems like you've planned to set up like two other movies off of Deadpool. You have time. Come back in 2 years.
I get it. You have these guys under contract, and they're young, but they're not the up-and-coming actors that Fassbender, McAvoy, and Lawrence were when you got them under contract when they were young. So, like, no one's backing down. Like, Sophie Turner is not in a Oscar race.
No.
So, I mean, and Ty Sheridan is not in an Oscar race. So, like, let's just, like, if you want to come back and do this, even if you just, like, you have the pure money right now with Deadpool. I mean, to the point where you're putting Deadpool in the heat of the summer. Like, weeks after episode nine. So, or no, not episode nine, no, Young Han Solo.
Yeah.
So, like, run with that. You've got Josh Brolin as Cable, signed for multiple movies. You're going to do an X-Force movie. It's set in the present part of the timeline. It's cut off from everything else. Take Deadpool and run with it. Use New Mutants as a soft reboot and go with it. There's no reason to revisit the main X-Men franchise.
Not at all. So, that's what I would do. It seems like that's what you and I both would do. Maybe as it gets closer to the supposed start date sometime this summer, they'll be like, maybe we should develop this some more. You know, there's no need to rush.
They didn't rush a Gambit movie out there, thank goodness. So.
Oh, and we didn't talk about the actual New Mutants movie with Boone, I think.
Yeah, Josh Boone or Justin Boone, something like that.
Yeah, and I think that's just this year.
Yeah,
that's to come out next year.
Yeah, this New Mutants, it's the guy who did Fault in Our Stars. Yeah,
there's no reason to rush this X-Men movie. You got
two already scheduled for 18. Yes. Yeah.
But I think with this one, it would be three, because this one come. Yeah, I think it's scheduled for November of next year.
They've already scheduled three X-Men movies for 2018.
Yeah, and this is the last one, which is in November, which... Just don't do it. Wait.
All right. So, Chad. Tom Cruise likes to do all his own stunts.
Tom Cruise is a crazy person.
Alex Kurtzman has a great reputation and record with the geek community, and he's taking on the Universal Monsters universe. Your thoughts on this standalone, franchise-starting, action-adventure romp with Tom Cruise that is a third trailer?
So all before, I've been like, you know, mildly interested, knowing I'm going to have to see it. But this third trailer, I don't know, it kind of ratcheted up just enough that I'm more intrigued by it. It's probably this last trailer, and there was like this featurette they released, which focused on Dr. Jekyll, and it showed you the I'm guessing the beginning of the transformation of Mr. Hyde. So all of that together has got me a little bit more intrigued, and this third trailer is heavy on that it takes a monster to beat a monster kind of thing. So kind of wonder what other things they have in this movie setting up. What they're trying to flesh out as this, I think they're sticking with Dark Universe now. So it's intriguing enough.
Which is funny because there are no horror elements to that, those trailers. They're all fun action adventure pulpy trailers.
Yeah.
The things that give me hope are McQuarrie has a screenplay by credit, so it's not just Kurtzman. And we know that McQuarrie and Cruise have a very deep and long-lasting rapport that has produced some really great stuff, mainly the Mission Impossible and the first Jack Reacher. And it looks like they're going to use Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde as the Nick Fury of this shared universe.
Yeah.
And, you know, can't be any worse than The Mummy Return of the Dragon that was like the third movie.
Oh, I've never seen that one.
Like,
no one gently.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be that worse than that. And it doesn't look like they're going to put a lot of heavy-handed stuff in there, because they're, it's literally, they have not announced a follow-up. They've been trying to They have scripts ready by Chris Morgan, who's the producer on the Fast and the Furious franchise, is also the producer on the Shared Universe. And, you know, he said that they have scripts ready and they're starting to kind of get stars and directors attached, but they're trying to wait and see what kind of financial success Mummy brings, which I think is a good model.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, oh, we're going to do an Amazing Spider-Man 3 and a Sinister 6 and a Aunt May movie. And...
They started talking a lot right before Spider-Man came out, because I thought they were that confident in it. But I don't think they, like, put too much development in it. And once it failed, they were like, never mind.
Yeah, thank you, Drew Goddard.
I'm concerned about The Mummy just because I don't know how many other people are excited for it. And it's coming right after Wonder Woman.
And right before He Who Must Not Be Named.
Is that the Michael Bay
movie? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's like 2 weeks before that one. So it has a little cushion on the backside, none on the front. So if people aren't as enthused about it, it could mean trouble. And outside of the Mission Impossible franchise, Tom Cruise isn't a big, like, huge number blockbuster opener.
Well, I mean, he's made solid movies that have been both critically successful and commercially successful recently. He's had a career resurgence post-Katie Holmes. You know, Jack Reacher, he got two movies out of that, both which made their money back.
The second made his money back?
Yeah. Oh. Both made their money back. And then the Mission Impossible franchise. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat, which is going to get an Emily Blunt-centered sequel.
And that one was kind of fringe because they marketed that one poorly and nobody went to see it. And then when people finally did see it, they're like, oh, this is good. It was just not at the theater so much. But it made enough in the theater and then got this cult following that it's got a sequel.
So, I mean, he's got a draw. It's just a matter of, you know, people my age going, I hear Mummy, I think Brendan Fraser. And this doesn't seem to have a tone that's much different from that.
So, the way too early tracking I saw had it around $44 million. I don't know how much a movie costs to make, but
rough estimate would probably be $120 to $160.
Okay, so if, let's just put Wonder Woman on the low end. Wonder Woman opens at 100. We're talking about between a 56% drop. It'll be right neck and neck with Mummy for number one. So there's a chance that the Mummy could open up and still not be number one that week. And if it doesn't open up number one that week, it might be in trouble.
But we also could be looking at Kong Skull Island type numbers, which were moderately okay, but they weren't like eye popping, but they were very solid for what that film was. But the difference is one has a June release date, the other had a March release date.
Well, but this March, you know, this March was a monster and everything kept coming out one after another. And I think Beauty and the Beast came out the week after Kong. So it's that it made its money back and had a little bit of legs.
It's the sixth highest grossing movie domestically.
So yeah, that I think is a more comparable spot this March than any other time. If it makes Kong numbers, it should be okay.
Kong numbers are somewhere around 400 to 500 million worldwide.
That should be okay for this.
Yeah, I think they would be happy with that to get a kickstart.
Yeah.
And I would advise them to move every other project down to the September-October range.
Yeah. That would be a good move.
I mean, capitalize on the monster element in the Halloween season and all of that, and far less competition in September and October. Ninja Go is just going to, like, chew scenery forever this September and October. All right. So we talked about the Wonder Woman reactions and our anticipation level for that. We covered the Aquaman image. Your thoughts on what James Wan is doing? I mean, he's shooting now. This is definitely a thing.
I mean, all we have to go for off of are like images, and as you alluded to earlier, these images are a stark contrast to what we've seen from these very same characters in Justice League. Like, I thought it was the same suit that she's wearing, but it's different. Because I've seen an image that had the Justice League steel of Mera and the James Bond steel of Mera. And it's really almost night and day, because she's wearing, I'm assuming, the same color kind of stuff. It's just that it looks gray, because everything's grayed out. Whereas this is like really, really bright and vibrant green against her really bright and vibrant red hair. So it all just stands out. So just tonally, well, like visually, it's a stark difference from what we've had before. And I think it's what we're going to see moving forward.
Yeah, which will be a nice change of pace. So, Chad, history tells us that Winston Churchill led a great, was a great prime minister of Great Britain, and that King Arthur, even though Guy Ritchie messed with his origins, was a legendary king and knight. We now know Optimus Prime will join him. Your thoughts, sir, on the final trailer to hype you up for Transformers The Last Night?
So, I watched this trailer, and in the middle of it, I cursed, because I'm like, I just love Optimus so much that I want this to be good. And it almost caught me. It almost gave me the trick of saying, I like this trailer. And then we get to the end of the trailer, in which Bumblebee falls apart and then pulls himself back up together. And I'm like, when can you do that? Why can you do that? Why aren't you dead? I'm done with this movie. Done. I'm done. It's like it. I can't remember what it was, but I know there's a toy when I was a kid that you put it together and you press the button and all of his limbs just fly out. That's what Bumblebee did. But we've seen in these movies Transformers get dismembered and they're dead. But this is magically one of his powers. He can pull himself back together and be fine. Like, his head was completely removed from his body. It looked at the rest of his body. Like, the eyes kept moving and, like, he kept talking or whatever, and everything came back together. No. 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 It's not the final straw. It's just the straw that reminded me of what I'm dealing with. And no. I know I'm going to have to sit through this almost 3-hour piece of visual garbage and be mad. But this trailer is not sucking me in. No. I say the nay.
Do we know who the little fairy woman is supposed to be who is talking to Optimus? The one that turns his eyes purple?
Oh, no. I assume she has something to do with Unicron, but I have no idea. I stopped trying to figure out people's names, because they could be from the cartoon, but they could just not be. And if they are from the cartoon, they're completely different.
So we're back to rooting for Unicron to eat the moon and destroy everything?
If it's going to reset everything, yeah.
Going to have to, because if you eat the moon...
Yeah. Earth's gone. And then we can start this universe all over. Go Unicron, go. #Grow Unicron, go.
I mean, yeah, it all kind of looks weird. It. I don't understand the time periods. Like, all this promotion for, you know... Here's the thing that gets me. So, Bay gets in trouble for dressing up Winston Churchill's home in Nazi regalia. Like, literally, like, swastikas falling from the rafters of Winston Churchill's home. Something slightly morbid about that. And then he says, oh, no, you don't, the veteran, I love veterans, I made 13 hours, I love veterans. You have to understand, Winston Churchill's a hero. He's one of the heroes of the film. Here's my issue. Is the author stuff and the Churchill stuff, is it all just like one big long, like, you know when the Tesserelli, the guy from all of Sandler's movies, that's in the first three movies?
I don't don't remember who is it.
John Tessazella or whatever his name is. The character with all the history.
Oh. Yeah, what about him?
He goes on these long, monologues of just info dumping.
Oh, you think that this is just going to be the big info dump and all that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is it completely possible that author and Churchill and Hitler and all of this is literally only in the film for, a 10-minute prologue voiced by Anthony Hopkins?
Yes.
Or not even a 10-minute prologue, if it's just, at some point they meet Anthony Hopkins and he's like, do you want to know why they come here? Here's why they come here, because they've been here since the beginning of time.
Yeah,
wait, that goes against everything that we said in the first movie where, the world never knew that, Transformers existed, except for, the Hoover Dam.
Yes, that's exactly what's going to happen. And, to push it further, because I'm still not giving up on this, I still think Anthony Hopkins is what's Churchill. And now, watching this reel and all this stuff, if I'm right, everybody should be upset, since Winston Churchill is clearly in the present and would have to be an immortal Transformer vampire.
Well, they called him, they could be Napoleon Khan, because they've already given a character name. He's English Lord something or other. So they could totally be Napoleon Khan there. Mm-hmm. But,
I'm just saying, he said Winston Churchill was a badass in the movie. We haven't seen hide nor hair Winston Churchill. We have seen Anthony Hopkins dressed up really nicely, and we've seen him talking to all the characters.
And holding things and touching things.
I would not be surprised if he's Winston Churchill. If I don't yell in the movie theaters, but if he's Winston Churchill, I'm yelling. You're right. Now, if my daughter's with me, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to embarrass him. There's me and you.
It will be me and you, and you will probably say, I knew it, yeah.
I will probably say, I expletive knew it in the middle of the theater, because I don't care about these movies.
Us and the 12 people who will be there.
It's probably more than 12, which is going to disappoint me.
Alright. So, Chad, I saw a movie with 12 people last week. It was entitled King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
How was it?
Well, let me tell you, Chad, have you ever thought, gee, I wonder what would happen if King Arthur was set into a video game world from, Destiny or something? And that's pretty much what we got. It's like Sherlock Holmes meets Destiny. It's pretty much the best way I can describe the visual aesthetic.
What? So it wasn't terrible.
So there's no Merlin, there's no Guinevere, there's no Lancelot, and the Round Table doesn't come in until the very end of the movie, and he doesn't become King Arthur till the end of the movie, and he doesn't get his Knights of the Round Table until the end of the movie.
I can see that, because they're trying to build this thing out.
Right. You have to. It's very obvious that they're trying to build it out and hold on to some stuff. The problem is the aesthetic and his, GoPro, shaky cam, in your face, gritty street level stuff that he does. If you like Sherlock Holmes and you like the way he shot Sherlock Holmes, you're going to like the movie.
Okay.
The problem for me was a couple of things. One, author's just a 20-something, 30-something dude who's, been street fighting and protecting women who have raised him in a brothel and, finds out through nightmares that he's, the son of a king and then, gets accidentally put on a ship and brought to the place where the stone is and he is put with the rest of the slate, the people to go and try and pull the sword, and he does, and then everybody freaks out, and then he passes out with the sword the first time, because the sword, basically, anytime you touch the sword, you enter video game territory. There is a clear visual distinction between the rest of the film and when he's in you know, author mode with Excalibur. Like, Excalibur is, like, Goldberg, Matt Goldberg said in his review, you know, like, there might as well be a power bar at the top of the screen. Because that's exactly what it is. He goes into, and his dad did the same thing, they go into what are essentially trances. And they basically kick everybody's rear end and kill a bunch of people to the point where, you know, other people kneel down in respect and are like, please don't kill me. And he's like, what did I do? You know? And so, like, the basic plot of the movie is him take A, coming to terms with his heritage, B, accepting the throne, C, understanding he has to kill the king, which will be easy for him to do because the king kills all his family and burns down his hometown. And it's also about how he learns how to control Excalibur and controlling the power that comes with Excalibur. So they did the whole reluctant king thing, which kind of works, but again, it's a guy who just kind of randomly finds out. It's not like he knows his entire time that he's the son of the king and he's just been hiding out because he doesn't want to take the throne. It's been, you know, oh, I had weird dreams and this lady told me one of my dreams meet.
All right. Is there Merlin in this?
Merlin is not in it. Like I said, Merlin, no Guinevere. No Lancelot. The Round Table comes in at the last, and the Knights of the Round Table come in at the last. The aesthetic for the prologue feels very much like a Game of Thrones, well, more of the Lord of the Rings. The movie seems like it's trying to ape Game of Thrones, especially with some of the action pieces, but it doesn't do it very well. And Jude Law is just too over-the-top and villainous. And they're, like, the whole deal, and again, we're getting into spoilers about a movie that made $15 million last weekend. So if you get upset about going into spoilers for a movie that made $15 million last weekend.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. But, like, they do this whole thing where, like, so there's a wizard king, a guy who is trying to abscond the throne from Arthur's father. And he is in cahoots with Law's character, who is a lower person, who is a member of Arthur's court and one of his knights. They, Arthur, you know, Arthur's father tries to get talked, is, you know, Jude Law tries to talk Arthur's father out of going to face this king because he thinks he can surrender, yada yada, tries to get him to do it without killing him, yada yada. And so he goes, Arthur's dad goes with Excalibur up to this temple while the knights are fighting around, and he goes to kill the Sorcerer King, and he kills the Sorcerer King. And this angers Jude Law and creates great fear in Jude Law that he's going to be found out and hung and killed. So Jude Law goes down to this little sub part of the castle somewhere, and like there's this lagoon. And, like, a magic Ursula-like creature exists who can bestow great power. And so, you know, the only way the little Ursula thing will grant you this power is if you fill the lake with the blood of the thing you love most in the world. And so he has to bring his wife there and kill his wife.
Wow.
Yeah. And then later, to get more power to defeat Arthur, because Arthur is, you know, now got the sword and is coming for him, he has to bring his daughter them down there and kill his daughter.
Yeah. That's pretty douchebag.
Yeah. And all the time, he's very, you know, like, holding his crown and twisting it in his head and being very Machiavellian and, you know, a poor Shakespearean thing. And it just... there are elements that work, there are elements that don't, and it just, it creates concern for me in that if we were like, okay, so I'm now knowing I'm not going to get 7 King Arthur movies, whoop-de-doo. If this was the kind of King Arthur you were trying to sell me, no thank you. But at the same time, Guy Ritchie isn't just not going to do another movie. Guy Ritchie's currently in production on a Disney remake.
Yeah.
Known as Aladdin. Which has a story which is not all that different from the story he just told in King Arthur. because his version of Arthur is a street rat thieving guy who ascends to a position of power from the streets and has to battle an evil wizard to assert his authority. So, like, he pretty much just made this movie with King Arthur, and he didn't do a very good job with it. And if he tries the shaky cam GoPro aesthetic on Aladdin, people gonna freak.
Yeah. And he's doing the songs.
Mm-hmm. And Will Smith.
Yeah.
It gave me serious pause and consideration about getting this guy to do Aladdin. Like, they hired Bill Condon to do Beauty and the Beast because Condon had major experience with Chicago and Chicago and Moulin Rouge and Burlesque, wasn't it Burlesque, the Cher,
yeah,
Christina Aguilera movie. Mm-hmm. So he had major experience with musicals, just like pure spectacle movie musicals with awards backing. Same way here. Like, they knew that that was what they wanted out of their Beauty and the Beast movie because it is built around those songs and it's a musical at heart. And so they hired a musical director to go and direct that movie. Perfect choice. You know, they got an understated indie director to come do Pete's Dragon and let him do whatever he wanted, and he created a very moving movie about grief and dealing with grief and growing up and coming of age. Like, Kenneth Burr has a long history with, you know, Shakespeare and Athenian legends and, you know, a bright color palette and fairy tales. So, like, bringing him on to do a folklore fairy tale in Cinderella worked. It fit the aesthetic. So, I look at Guy Ritchie and I look at the idea of Aladdin, and I can see that the story is similar to Arthur. And I see what he just did with Arthur, and it makes me go, eh.
I mean, that was always the concern with him doing Aladdin anyway. But you would think that Warner Brothers would have seen, like, an early cut of this movie before they made that decision.
It's not Warner's, it's Disney.
I mean, that you think they would have seen something of this movie before they made that decision. I don't know. It's a very curious decision.
I mean, because Man of Uncle is the same way. It is. It has that same aesthetic.
Which is why I would have never thought of him to do Aladdin. So, I don't know what it is about him that they thought, this is the guy to do Aladdin. And they know they've got to get this one right, because it's like Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, and Lion King. Those are the ones.
And Little Mermaid. Those are the four.
Those are the big four. And
no one really cares about Hercules. Mulan is hit or miss. Depends on your gender and upon your age.
Yeah, younger than me, right. And girls tend to like Mulan.
And no one cares about Hercules or Tarzan.
Or the Hunchback.
Right. Although Hunchback's really good.
I like most of them, yeah. But I do like Hunchback.
Hunchback is really good and has a really awesome soundtrack. And you could do that and I think be really interesting because it is the darkest of those Disney movies from the 90s.
It is.
And it should be for the set, for the material that they're working with.
If they do it and they do the actual ending, don't ever do that because your two lead die. But,
right.
You know. But I don't know. We'll have to see what he does with Aladdin. I think the shaky cam GoPro stuff, it just can't go. It can't happen. Everything else is like negotiable, but that, it's got to go.
I just found it like, and again, I could see him looking at this as a paycheck opportunity because, like, if he does a halfway decent job, we've seen with Beauty and the Beast. Not everybody universally loved Beauty and the Beast. There were some people who outright hated the way that they did that movie, but it is the number one movie in the worldwide box office by a mile right now. Mm-hmm. It will end the year in the top three.
Yep.
You know, there's a chance Disney could have all three of the top three. So,
or Disney/Sony.
Guardians, Beauty and the Beast in episode 8.
See, I don't think Guardians makes it.
Guardians is going to make $1 billion, is already on track to make $1 billion too. That would put it right below Beauty and the Beast at a million at 1.5.
I still think Spider-Man beats it.
With a July release date?
Mm-hmm. I think Spider-Man beats it.
I mean, I don't see Spider-Man having a $145 million opening weekend.
Spider-Man's gonna beat it.
Because Downey?
Because it's the bad Spider-Man movie. It still made like
$600-700 million.
Yeah. So.
But they were May releases. Early May releases.
One, well.
The only one that wasn't was Amazing Spider-Man.
And that still made seven something.
Right.
So, this plus the Marvel spin, and as they keep pushing that this is a Marvel spin, so the regular folks see it and like, it's Spider-Man, and he's actually with Marvel.
He's with Iron Man.
Yeah, and he's with Iron Man, which is why Iron Man's all over everything. I think it'll beat out Guardians.
Which is interesting, because I think that Thor Ragnarok has a shot to make good money as well.
I mean, they're making $1 billion money. It's going to make good money, but not $1 billion money.
We'll see how Helena and Watiti's sense of humor can add to that.
If Thor makes $1 billion, then just shut it down and give it all to Disney. Just wrap it up.
Well, it'll be an interesting comparison, because I think the number one comparison will be Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. Because it's another November release.
Oh, but I think it'll smoke Doctor Strange.
So. All right. So, Chad, we're going to end up eventually seeing Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go forward with that. The next time we speak, we will get ready to... we'll review our weekly movie news and get ready for Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Men Tell No Tales. With two directors you've never heard of who made a movie that sat on the shelf for a long time and seems to be getting positively received.
I've heard it's the best one since the first one. Which is not saying all that much. But
because it feels like the first one. And it pretty much is the first one. With Jack Sparrow and two young kids who find themselves after an execution attempt goes wrong.
Yeah. You know.
And a pirate who's out for Jack because Jack cost him something precious.
You know. Roll with the hits.
A movie franchise, a franchise that was started off of a amusement park ride, is a $1 billion franchise.
Yeah, after they suck, which, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Well, Verbinski's movies don't suck; they're just overly complex and nuanced, and not your typical popcorn movie thing.
Or you could say that.
And the subject matter is pretty dark, man. I mean, your main character, like, instead of ending up with this happily ever after, you know, rips out his own heart and gives it away so that he can work a pirate ship for 100 years.
This is true.
And he leaves his pregnant girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was his wife.
Wife. Pregnant wife.
They got married in the midst of a battle.
Yeah. Yeah. I still, to this day, say that that was the wrong way to go. Because you should have just had Depp take on the legacy of the Flying Dutchman, and you could have ended it after 3.
But a billion.
But you have Will Turner at that point, a free reigning Will Turner, who you could have done the same thing that you did with Paul Walker. You know, I miss the bullets, I miss the action. Well, I'm here, I'm staying here, I'm a stay at home dad now, and a blacksmith or whatever, and. You know, but I miss the high seas. I miss the adventure.
Will Turner, don't put butts in seats.
Well, apparently neither did Captain Jack Sparrow. On Stranger Tides did not make that much money.
Yeah, it did. Hold on.
Not compared to World's End and the other Verbinski movie.
Hold on. I'm pretty sure that crappy one made $1 billion.
I mean, we'll see. They've had this movie sitting on the shelf for a while.
Yep, made $1 billion. So, Captain Jack puts butts in seats.
Will Turner probably could have put some butts in seats too. I mean, he's gonna be back this time, so he's
maybe 700 million worth of butts, not $1 billion worth of butts.
Well, I mean, Depp has his issues now with Amber Heard and that whole deal. Or not Amber Heard.
No, it is Amber Heard.
Yeah.
She's moved on.
Yeah. All right. So that'll do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mitch Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.